Americans who care about religious liberty cannot be silent. They cannot give up. They have got to weigh in with their members of Congress. You've got to continue to stand firm and be public and live your faith.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Well, thanks for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. If you are a regular listener to the daily mainstream media, you probably have a pretty negative view of what's happening in our nation's capital. Today, however, we're going to be talking with someone who is there and who has a firsthand view of the real story about many of the positive things that are taking place, especially when it comes to the critically important issue of religious liberty. Our guest today is David Christensen, Vice President for Government Affairs with the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. David, welcome back to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you on the show again.
John, thanks so much for having me.
David, I know it's hard to know where to begin on this discussion because there's so many moving parts that are taking place, but let's start with what many religious freedom advocates consider to be a major hopeful victory, and that is the recent confirmation of Kansas Governor Sam Brownback as the ambassador at large for international religious freedom. What exactly is this position all about, and what can we reasonably expect from Governor Brownback when it comes to this new position?
Yeah, we are really excited about his confirmation to this position, the ambassador at large for international religious liberty. And he's at the State Department, and what his job and role is to work on promoting religious liberty overseas. So in 1998, the International Religious Freedom Act was passed, and there was a position for kind of an at-large, you know, somebody who is the head of religious liberty over at the State Department. But quite honestly, and it became very apparent during the last 8 years that this position was a lower level State Department official who did not even report to the Secretary of State. And so Congressman Chris Smith from New Jersey and others pushed legislation 2 years ago, 2016, that passed and actually President Obama signed into law to elevate the position of religious liberty to an ambassador position who would directly report to the Secretary of State, would have more authority, would have an actual office. This is all very inside the Beltway stuff, but would have a lot more authority and criteria for promoting religious liberty at the international level. And we think Governor Brownback is perfect for that. He helped as a senator pass the 1998 law that President Clinton signed into law. And he also has worked on helping Christians in Darfur who are being persecuted in Sudan. He's worked to help Baha'i minorities in Iran. He's been an advocate of human rights and obviously religious liberty. What we've seen with the persecution of Christians, the beheadings, whether it's in Africa, Nigeria, whether it's in Iraq, obviously, the Yazidis are being persecuted, and others, you know, Sam Brownback is somebody who's going to really elevate this as a foreign policy goal. And the argument, and Sam Brownback made this point in his confirmation hearings, we have got to protect the religious liberties and the freedoms of others from oppression and from ISIS and from others, because it's going to benefit not only the people, which is clearly important to protect their dignity, but it's an important foreign policy goal and strategy for the United States. And so to get back to promoting that, I mean, we pushed so hard to get the State Department under Secretary Kerry to even declare what was happening as genocide. They were so resistant. Yeah. We just need strong leadership, and then we think Governor Brownback is the person for that job.
Well, that is exciting, and certainly this whole issue of religious freedom has gained additional prominence and really seems to be a much higher priority for this current administration. We, of course, have recently seen the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services announce the establishment or formation of a new Conscience and Religious Freedom Division within DHHS's Office for Civil Rights. Tell us about this new division.
Well, this new division is within the existing Office of Civil Rights that takes claims of discrimination on healthcare matters, whether it's HIPAA violations, whether it's violations of other kinds of civil rights law in the context of healthcare. And, you know, just a quick aside, I worked for Congressman Dave Weldon back in on the Hill. He was a Florida congressman. And in 2004, Congress passed legislation to add to conscience protections because we were seeing a trend where government agencies or states getting federal funds or hospitals getting federal funds were discriminating against pro-life healthcare providers.
Right.
You saw nurses being forced to participate in an abortion against their will. The state of California since then, in the last few years, have mandated abortion insurance coverage so that churches are losing their insurance coverage. Oregon, Illinois, there's other states. So Obama rescinded President Bush's regulations enforcing those conscience protections. And what Trump's HHS did recently was to elevate an Office of Civil Rights within a religious freedom division to enforce multiple, over 25 laws on the books protecting the conscience rights of pro-life healthcare providers and people who object to assisted suicide. And then they actually put forward a regulation that people were going to be sending out alerts saying, hey, you got to file comments with the government, say this is good because the left is going to oppose this. So, you know, we don't think doctors, nurses, residents and resident federally funded residency programs should be forced to participate in abortion. This is a long history in American jurisprudence and constitutional law and morality of conscience rights. And unfortunately, the Obama administration did nothing to protect the conscience rights of so many Americans. And this whole new division and this new regulation is to now start actually enforcing those violations that have been ongoing for the last 8 years.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
Well, that's very helpful. Now, David, this new division seems to have two focus areas. Conscience, which typically seeks to protect, as you've talked about, the moral and religious beliefs of healthcare providers like doctors and nurses, and also religious freedom, which has broader implications when it comes to healthcare insurance, et cetera. What do you see as the scope of this new division? How broad might that get? And what are some of the most important issues it's likely to address early on?
Well, there's no question that the religious liberty protection element is important. So like I mentioned, for instance, that California has mandated all insurance plans cover elective abortion, which means if you are a religious health insurance company, you now have to provide abortion coverage. If you are a religious employer and you had insurance for your employees, you now have to cover elective abortion or drop your health care coverage. Of course, if you drop your health care coverage, you're violating Obamacare's employer mandate
and
you have to pay
fines.
So, you know, Pastor Jack Hibbs, some others in California have filed complaints over 2 years ago with the Obama administration and got nowhere. They basically ignored the complaints and finally came back and said, oh, we're, you know, this isn't a problem and you're not protected anyway. So this new division is going to protect that. And you say, well, you know, the federal government can't stop every act of discrimination at the state or local level, but here there's a funding hook. HHS and the federal government funds California, Oregon, others to the tune of billions of dollars a year under the bills that say you cannot, in a federally funded program, discriminate against somebody who's got pro-life concerns, whether it has to do with abortion, whether it has to do with assisted suicide. And the last thing we want is pro-life doctors, nurses, or hospitals, or employers to suddenly say, oh, now in this federally funded program, I'm going to have to violate my conscience or my deeply held religious beliefs and go along with this. That's just entirely inappropriate, entirely unconstitutional. And so this administration is elevating religious freedom and conscience protections for pro-life on the assisted suicide issues to the same level of other civil rights laws that we all agree with, right? People shouldn't be discriminated against on the basis of race or religion or age, for instance, or natural or national origin. Now we're seeing parity between the way that the government is going to enforce those civil rights and conscience protections.
Now, David, let's turn to the judicial branch for just a minute. Of course, the Supreme Court recently declined to consider a couple of cases challenging a Mississippi state law aimed at protecting both religiously motivated employees and organizations. I'll talk a little bit about Mississippi's Religious Liberty Accommodations Act and what the Supreme Court's refusal to take this case means.
Well, we in Alliance Defending Freedom and some other groups really worked on a number of issues. We haven't gotten very far at the federal level, but in the states, they passed the Government Non-Discrimination Act, and the lower court struck it down as being discriminatory. The bill is really simple. It's a non-discrimination policy as it relates to a state punishment of people on the basis that they support marriage between a man and a woman. So that, you know, an organization does not have to violate their conscience or their religious beliefs as it relates to their views of marriage, or if there's a school that has a code of conduct for students, for instance, on sexual behavior, as it relates to what their views of marriage is, the state government should not punish them. Good news is that the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld that law, and of course the plaintiffs who are challenging it appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court declined to consider it. So the Mississippi law is on the books. It's important to try to get those kinds of protections, I think, throughout. And one point of clarification, John, this has been demonized so inappropriately by the left. This right, does yeah. not license anybody to do anything other than to follow their beliefs. It simply prevents discrimination by the government against them. So, you know, we don't think that the government should punish people because they happen to be pro-life. We don't think the government should punish somebody because they happen to support marriage between a man and woman. It does not affirmatively provide any new, quote, right to discriminate or something like that on the part of people. We should have a respect each other even when we strongly disagree, and there should be a live and let live policy. But the government should not come in and punish organizations, employers, churches because they disagree over the view of marriage. And, you know, even Kennedy in the ruling on Obergefell overturning federal marriage laws, state marriage laws, said, oh, the people of faith should be able to, you know, disagree. There's millions of Americans of goodwill who still believe marriage is between a man and woman. We should agree to disagree. That's exactly what this law did. And we're going to continue to support those kinds of efforts.
David, there's so much more we could talk about, but we're just about out of time. What do you think are the short and long-term outlooks for Americans who are concerned that our fundamental right to religious liberty has been quickly eroding? Do we have real cause for hope? Do we have continued cause for concern? As someone who works on this issue on the front lines in our nation's capital, what's your perspective?
I do think that there is definitely reason for hope, and I do think there's reason for concern. I do think that the left has gone almost apoplectic in its effort to try to use the heavy hand of government at the federal or the state or the local government to force people violate their deeply held religious beliefs. You know, and I, you know, when I'm talking to Hill staffers or congressmen, I'll say, hey, look, you may or may not want to live like an Amish person, but shouldn't we all agree that they should be able to live in accordance with their deeply held beliefs? Why should the federal government come in and squash them? There are exciting opportunities here, and the president has, you know, last year he issued a religious liberty executive order, Department of Justice, then put out a brilliant memo of guidance on religious liberty, and we're starting to see with the HHS example, we're starting to see some of these heavy-handed Obama policies and regulations rolled back. Americans who care about religious liberty cannot be silent. They cannot give up. They have got to weigh in with their members of Congress because, frankly, the other left is very loud. To encourage people, it does make a difference when you talk to your state legislator. It makes a difference when you talk to your congressman, your senator. You've got to weigh in. You've got to continue to stand firm and be public and live your faith. And I think there's real opportunity here. We're seeing signs of hope. We're seeing examples where religious liberty is increasingly being protected. We just need to keep pushing forward.
So, David, as we finish our discussion today, where can our listeners go to learn more about the great work that you and the Family Research Council do in our nation's capital to protect religious liberty and to make sure that so many of these other important issues are heard by our federal lawmakers?
Well, definitely, please visit our website, frc.org. You know, we also, as John, you said, we work with you and other state leaders to try to give support to you. It's really important that folks get connected. So again, frc.org, you can get a lot of information on a lot of these policies.
Great. Well, with that, David Christensen, I want to thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters and for the incredible work that you and FRC do on behalf of so many families across our nation.
John, thank you so much. It's good to be with you.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. to listen to our radio show online, and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.